It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Barrett. New work requirements took effect at the beginning of this month to the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program known as Food Share here in Wisconsin. Work requirements mean that many adults are required to provide proof of work or job training at least 80 hours per month to receive benefits, with some exceptions. But those exceptions are changing under these new rules, meaning more people will be required to provide proof of employment or education. Advocates and researchers say the changes could affect tens of thousands of Wisconsin residents. Who in Wisconsin is affected, and what do the changes mean for them? Brooklyn Gray is food share manager for Feeding America Eastern Wisconsin, the largest hunger relief organization in the state. Brooklyn, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, no, I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
All right, we've got these new changes when it comes to work requirements for food share and exemptions to them. What kind of concerns are you seeing from food share recipients that you work with as these changes roll out?
Yeah, it's been quite a few months of just Department of Health Services slowly getting these changes in place. So a lot of the confusion we're hearing from folks is honestly just around when these changes are taking place, if they apply to people, if they do apply to different people and families, like what actions do they need to take to maintain their benefits? And honestly, we've had a lot of concerns that people think SNAP is ending. So we've just done a lot of work to make sure we're sharing out, no, program's still here. The rules are just changing for some people. And then just doing our best job to make sure folks are understanding what the program is, how to maintain benefits, and what these new rules are.
I got to say, I've been digging around and I found a little baffling, the timeline on when these rules hit. Can you spell it out for me? Because I've been stumped as I try to research this.
With the work requirement for food share, Wisconsin has been taking the last several months to make sure that we're all on the same page as a state with the federal government's new rules for the work requirement. And so the biggest changes has been the groups of people who the work requirement applied to. Previously, there were several exemptions in place for these different groups to not need to meet the work requirement. Just as a general reminder, for people who do need to meet the work requirement, it's about 80 hours a month, about 20 hours a week of work in order to receive food share. The typical exemptions for food share include folks who are disabled, people who are elderly, people who are unable to work due to an illness or injury or a physical or a mental barrier. But previous exemptions also existed that are now slowly being unwound. And so in December of 2025, the first round of those changes started taking place for new people who were applying and people who were renewing their benefits, because you do have to renew and keep up to date with all your information. So in December, the age of people who were previously exempt was changed. So prior to December 2025, if you were aged 54 or older or under the age of 18, you were exempt from the work requirement. In December, they expanded that a little bit. So you were not exempt from the work requirement until you were 60 years old. So that age went up. In addition, families who had minor children in the home, so kiddos who were 17 and younger, those families were exempt from the work requirement. Now that new rule is, unless you have a child in the home who is younger than 14, so 13 years or younger, that's no longer an exemption. So if all your kiddos in the home are 14 through 17 years, that's no longer an exemption for the work requirement.
Now, even before these those exemptions changed, we had work requirements for some people. How smooth is that process? What are the barriers for people who don't have those exemptions and do have to prove these that they meet these work and or education requirements?
Absolutely. So the overall work requirement, those 80 hours, typically have to be approved by the most common is when you go through an application or a renewal, you have to submit your most recent 30 days of pay. So if you're paid biweekly, it is your two most recent pay stubs. If you're paid weekly, it is the most recent four. If you just started your job, there's a form that you can fill out with your employer or a supervisor that just fills out your hourly rate. And this is how the state is able to verify that you're meeting the hourly requirement for the work requirement. So those barriers, oftentimes it's pay stubs are digital. How do I submit those to an office if I don't have an online account or I can't get to the office? If you're brand new to the job and you don't know your supervisor that well, or you don't know if they'll fill out the paperwork, maybe there's a delay in getting that form filled out and submitted. A lot of what we do as advocates at Feeding America Eastern Wisconsin is we help with submitting that paperwork. We help with creating the online access accounts to submit paperwork online. I fax paperwork almost every week for people just to try to make that process easier. But we do find that that little bit of paperwork, that little detail about those 30 days, that does tend to be one of those barriers in certifying the work hours.
One concern I've had with work requirements, whether it's food aid or things like Medicaid, is, okay, if I have a retail job and I work 20 hours a week, easy peasy to prove that. If I am cobbling together, I'm doing some rideshare work for a while, I'm doing seasonal work when a harvest is coming in, whatever, I don't have the regular hours. Are there edge cases like that where people are having trouble establishing that they meet these requirements?
Yes, absolutely. Once you start having income from multiple places, it just adds to the burden of like how much paperwork a person needs to submit. The paperwork for the gig work, like Uber, babysitting, caring for a family member or whatever, if you're receiving pay for those activities, there is a form Wisconsin has called this self-employment verification form. It is, for the most part, very straightforward, but it feels overwhelming because the way that form is built is if you had your whole own business, and a lot of people don't realize you can skip the salary, the insurance, the rent, your capital expenses, you can skip a lot of that. All that they're looking for is just for you to fill out how many hours a month you're working and about how much you earned that month and from whom like you earned that money from. And so explaining like this very intimidating looking paperwork to people, that's also what we do, and just try to make that a little bit more approachable. But it's absolutely a barrier for a lot of folks.
One concern that comes up with work requirements is, hey, there might be some people who are eligible, right? They meet the standards, but because of the bureaucracy, they ultimately don't get the benefits. Is that something you run into as you work with people? Is that something that you're concerned about?
So when we assist with people with applications or we're educating people on food share, we are always very honest about the time it takes to go through this process. So whether it is the application itself, the food share interview, or following up with that paperwork. And sometimes we do get people who are going, I don't have time for this. Thank you so much, but I'm good. And we never push people, like it's always other people's choice on whether they want to apply or not. But the time it takes to go through these processes is absolutely one of the barriers that does stop people from applying for benefits.
When these requirements are put in place, often there's a concern that, hey, there are people who could be working, should be working. They're kind of taking advantage of this system to get food aid instead of working. I know probably you don't go into it trying to judge each and every person coming in. But what do you say to people who raise those concerns?
Honestly, it is years and years and years of misunderstanding the program. I've been in this work for several years now, and not at any point, perhaps maybe like during the pandemic, there was a loosening of the work requirement, but people have always had to work in order to receive food share. The people who genuinely can't work are usually, it's usually due to a disability. It's due to age. It's due to not being able to find work because they live in a rural place and maybe they don't have consistent transportation. I think that is one of the largest misconceptions about food share as a program, is that people are leaning on it and scooting around the system and what have you. But the work requirement is required for every person, unless you have like an approved, one of the very few, but approved exemptions for not working.
Brooklyn, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
No worries.
Brooklyn Gray is food share manager for Feeding America Eastern Wisconsin, the largest hunger relief organization in the state. For more on the larger impact of these changes, Sarah Halpern-Meekin is here. She's director of the Institute for Research on Poverty at UW-Madison and Bascom Professor of Women, Family, and Community in the School of Human Ecology. Sarah, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
What sort of impact do you see these changes in work requirements, these changes in exemptions having on the number of people who are able to access food aid?
So the estimates that I've seen from the state are that about 44,000 people are likely to be newly subject to these work requirements. And so that raises the question of how many of them will possibly lose benefits if they have challenges either complying with those rules or challenges completing the paperwork to show that they're complying with those rules.
As a policy choice, the idea behind the work requirements is, hey, we think some people may be using this that don't need it. They should be in the workforce instead. And the positive way to look at it is, hey, these are people who, you know, they could be adding to the state's workforce, bringing a lot of economic benefit. What do we know about the impact of these kind of work requirements when it gets, you know, to bringing people back into jobs?
So you raise a really good point, right? What is the purpose of this kind of policy change? We know already before this policy change that most people who were on SNAP were either children, older adults, or were working. And so it's not that there's this very large portion of people who are in their prime working years and have no disabilities who are not working and receiving SNAP. But the idea of this is to be encouraging people to be in the workforce and be limiting their access to benefits if they're not in the workforce. And what we've seen in previous research is that with past increases in SNAP work requirements, they have led to declines in SNAP enrollment, but there have not been any increases in employment. So that hope that the incentive of being able to get ongoing SNAP assistance if you are complying with work requirements would increase work has not been borne out in previous instances of increased work requirements.
Do we know why that is? Is it just that, hey, this might be an area where the work isn't available, or why isn't it working as intended?
So the research that I've seen suggests that what happens primarily is that people have trouble complying with the paperwork required to document their work activities in the way that's required by the law. So that is, they're losing benefits not because they're unwilling to follow the rules, but because it's difficult to jump through the hoops necessary to show that they're following the rules.
Now, we've been focusing on what this means for individual people who might receive food aid. Another change here in the new requirements, Wisconsin would need to keep the food share error rate under 6%, which in my understanding, Wisconsin already does. Some states don't. Can you talk about that error rate for food share payments as part of this policy?
Yeah, so Wisconsin is in a fortunate position that the error rate is below that 6% threshold. What happens when states get above that 6% threshold is eventually they will start having to pay for part of the costs of the benefits. So right now, the situation has been that the administrative costs are shared between the federal government and the state, although the state is now expected to pick up even more of the administrative costs than before. But the costs of the benefit themselves have been borne by the federal government. For states with higher error rates above that 6% threshold, they will start being responsible for some of the costs, which could put states in a bad financial position or lead them to decide they can't afford to pay for the benefits people are entitled to.
When it comes to implementing these work requirements, what kind of flexibility do states have as far as timing, how they implement it, how much assistance they might provide to people to help them fill out the paperwork on all of this? What could Wisconsin do differently potentially than other states?
Well, I know that the state is working on that now, has been rolling out these changes. So we had this increase where work requirements used to only be for people up to age 54, and now that's been expanded to 64. So the state has done that incrementally, moved it up to 59 first, and then is moving it up to 64 to try to help people adjust over time. And they're trying to communicate with people to make sure that they know if they are newly subject to these requirements so that they can get together the paperwork that they need to comply with them. You know, there is only so much the state can do because the rules are set at the federal level. So the state can try to help people comply. The state can task caseworkers and counties with working with people if they have the case for a good cause exemption to the work requirements. But fundamentally, the state has to follow the rules that are set out at the federal level, and they can just try to help individuals to the best of their ability to follow those rules as well.
I want to look at the community impact here. If because of these requirements, a lot of people lose their food assistance in an area with higher poverty, and you could picture maybe that's a part of a city or part of a rural county that has a higher reliance on food aid. Is there a spillover benefit if lots of people in that area aren't getting that aid? What does that mean for the grocery stores and the wider economy of that area?
That's a really good point. And it brings up two aspects of what we're seeing change, right? So one of the changes, one of these policy changes, is that people who are living in areas of high unemployment, that threshold for what's considered an area of high unemployment, making you no longer have to abide by those work requirements, that threshold of high unemployment has been raised. So there will be some areas where everyone used to be exempt from work requirements that no longer are because of that increased unemployment threshold. The question you were asking, though, you know, really points out that SNAP use varies a lot from place to place within cities and also especially between counties. You know, we look at a place like Dane County, SNAP receipt is around 8% of people. In Adams or Ashland, the rate's more like 16 or 17% of people. And so, you know, we're talking about a really large proportion of the local population. If a number of those people were to lose their SNAP benefits, that's fewer dollars being spent in local stores. It also means likely a higher demand at local food pantries.
Sarah, as we wrap up, it's still early days on these changes and exceptions on these work requirements for food assistance. What are you watching for as these come into full effect over the next couple of few years?
We're really going to be watching those SNAP receipt rates, and we're going to be watching what proportion of people fall off those SNAP rolls. And we really want to understand why that's happening. If they're coming off the SNAP rolls because they've gotten a well-paid job and they don't need those benefits anymore, then that's a win. If they're coming off the SNAP rolls because they can't comply with the paperwork, and they are following the work requirement rules and they still are in need of food assistance, then we have a larger problem for that individual and for our state.
Sarah, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Sarah Halpern-Meekin is director of the Institute for Research on Poverty at UW-Madison and Bascom Professor of Women, Family, and Community in the School of Human Ecology. Earlier, we spoke with Brooklyn Gray, food share manager for Feeding America Eastern Wisconsin, the largest hunger relief organization in the state, looking at changes in work requirements for food aid.